All right. So what are we going to talk about today? Today we're going to talk about the work that I did last year enabling docking stations and removable drive bays. In the past, Linux has not had support for hot docking. You could always get support for your docking station if you booted in the dock, but anything else, you were kind of screwed. And last year, we went through and put that support in there, and as of 2.6.18, it's now available to you, so you should be able to pick it up, I think, in some of the distro kernels already. So I'm going to cover this talk in somewhat more of a general way than I have in the past. We're going to sort of generically talk about how hot plug devices work, and then we're going to talk about how ACPI and hot plug interact, and we're also going to talk about how you can get access to some of the events and really primitive user interface that I made for the docking station and the bay driver so that you can write UDEV scripts to actually control them, since I don't know how. Oh, and someone told me if I put a puppy in my slide, people would be happy. Yeah. All right, so how does hot plug work? I mean, there's lots of different hot plug devices out there, but basically they're all the same. You stick a device in somewhere, and something has to notice that you stuck it in there. And that's usually either an interrupt, if you're lucky, or polling, if you're really sad. But at any rate, we noticed that something got put in, and then in the case of usually what happens is that the system software detects it, and then it needs to actually rescan the bus that this device was inserted onto in order to detect the change. Let's see. So with PCI hot plug, you also have other different types of interrupts. Like you might get an interrupt when you shut the little gate on the adapter with the slot where you put the adapter. Sometimes they have little locks or little latches that you have to put down. Sometimes just the act of putting something into the slot will generate a presence detect notification, and so the OS can get information about an adapter being added there. So after we add the adapter in and notice it's there, we have to actually initialize it. Usually what will happen is the hot plug subsystem will actually go out and load the correct device driver because it's, you know, obviously you want to leave the expert up to initializing its own device. But sometimes we need to do some extra things before we can call the device driver. In the case of docking station, for example, we have to actually do something to the physical interface on the dock station in order to allow the devices behind the dock station to be scanned. So there are some additional things that need to be done sometimes. And sometimes this requires the use of ACPI. So after we initialize the device, we get software representation of the device and the operating system. There's software bits that go all over the place whenever you have a device in there. We can see them in user space by looking in SysFS. You'll see lots of little structures that describe the device, but there's also stuff that you can't see. So once the device is in, we all of a sudden start allocating memory, which is now something we have to keep track of, and that's notable because you have to actually get rid of it once you remove the device. And that's a little bit different than devices that you don't remove, sort of. Some buses, as I mentioned, require actually physically unlocking the device when you remove it. Like, they may not want you to just yank the device out without actually removing power from the slot. So there's certain routines that we sometimes have to call before we can just pull something out of the system. And either the device driver or the hot plug controller knows how to do this. So I'm not going to go through all of ACPI or even, like, a minuscule portion of it, because ACPI is a specification and it's over 600 pages long. But if you're really interested in learning more about ACPI, you can go to acpi.sourceforge.net and what? I think it was HP and Microsoft and Intel. Okay, well, they have their name on it. whoever's responsible, I'm sure has left the country and is hiding on some remote island by now. Anyway, ACPI stands for Advanced Configuration and Power Interface. So obviously it's responsible not only for power management type activities, but also for configuring of devices. And we use this in Linux for as little as possible, honestly, but sometimes you just can't get away from using it. And so we do when it's useful. So basically the way that it works is if your system has ACPI support, then it can capture events and route them to drivers, ACPI events. It will also allow you to execute certain functions that were provided by the system manufacturer. Basically, they have this interpreted language that they write this table in that gives you a set of routines that you can call in order to initialize your device. So, for example, on the dock station, they know when I dock my IBM into the IBM dock station 2, they know exactly what device is on that dock station because they made it. So they can put all of this stuff into these ACPI methods and have me, the operating system, call them, and since it's an interpreted language, our interpreter will just execute it line by line. And in that sense, they've actually written the device initialization code for us. So we don't have to do anything other than call this thing, and they have all the brains, which is a lot of the reason why it's unpopular in Linux, right? That's not the way we like to do things. But it's really difficult to not do it when we just don't have any way of knowing all of the other things we need to do, because they either don't tell us or it would take a long time to implement every single laptop docking station initialization. So that's the way it works. The list of routines is contained in something called a DSDT table, and that's also where you'll see manufacturers put a list of possible devices in their system. So basically what happens is the system boots up and it scans this table and it says, here's all the possible devices. It creates some sort of software representation for them, and here's methods that are associated with this device. And so even if devices aren't present when you boot, we can still find out about some of them. So that brings me to, how does this work with Hotplug? So as I mentioned, at driver load time, devices are defined in the DSDT, and we can tell which ones are hot pluggable based on what functions are assigned to that device. So for example, on PCI, you'll find that slots that are hot pluggable, that are controllable via ACPI, will have a method called EJ0, which basically is an injection method that they want you to call before you eject the device. Or you'll find something that says EJD, which means I'm a device behind something that's hot pluggable and I'm dependent on this. So in that sense, it's also removable. Or you can find some other indications. There's a variety of different methods depending on the type of device. So what happens is you load through here, you find some device that is marked as ejectable, and you say, oh, I'm interested in that. I want to know if this device is not present. I want to know when it is present, because the ACPI will tell us. So we basically register a notification with ACPI. They'll send us some event. It's usually called something like bus check or device check, which basically means something happened, go check it out. And they usually indicate that we need to rescan the bus. We'll also get an explicit eject notification event too, which is nice, although sometimes we get a device check instead of eject. But either way, it could indicate a removal as well as an insertion. So once we find this new device and we scan the bus and we say, okay, I got this device, sometimes you'll need, as I mentioned, to do some additional initialization before we call the device driver. And in the case of, for example, PCI Bridge has a routine called PRT, which will go out and it will say, here's the interrupt routing table for this bridge. So it will say which interrupt lines it's going to route to where. Or you can, in the case of docking station, as I told you earlier, there's a method that you can call that will actually physically connect the pins on the dock station connector. And it may also go out and reconfigure things. For example, let's say there's a USB port on your dock station, you need the USB host controller on your actual laptop to know about that. It may have some pin or bit that needs to be twiddled in order to detect the USB hub on your dock station. Okay, so I already sort of went over what do we do when we dock. So just a little bit more details about dock. As I mentioned, dock is defined by system vendors. It's a control method, meaning it's something that actually does something as opposed to something that actually just names a value or something like that. And it's also, as I mentioned, used to control the isolation logic. And after we call dock is when we can scan for devices, because before, it'll look like they're not even there. So here's an example of a DSDT definition. This is something that I ripped out of the ACPI spec. But this shows you the device defined in the DSDT and various methods associated with it. You can see that it's got an ejectable method, and that's a big tip-off that it's hot pluggable. But the tip-off that it's actually a dock station is that there's this DCK method. And I can find that in software with the right API. So we know when we start up our dock station driver, if we find some method associated with this ACPI device called dock, then it's a docking station, and we care. So here's how it looks. It's pretty simple. It does both dock and undock, depending on what argument, and you either fail or you don't. So. Oh, more puppies. I thought you might need that after looking at ACPI code. All right, so a little bit about docking now. So there's sort of three ways we talk about docking. There's cold docking, which is what's always been supported in Linux. It's when you basically boot up with the system in the dock station. That's fine, that's normal. There's warm docking, which is you suspend your laptop, you boot outside the dock station, you stick it in the dock station, and then you unsuspend. So this may or may not work. If suspend is working properly, it should work, because I think, as far as I know, suspend causes all the buses to be re-enumerated anyway. But it might not. I don't know. What I'm going to talk about today mostly is hot docking and undocking. This is where your system is fully powered up outside of the docking station, and you insert it into the docking station, and everything is detected. And when you want to remove it, you just hit the button and you pull your laptop and you go. You don't have to suspend or anything. And that has never been supported, but is now in 2.6.18, although there's some bug fixes you probably want, so I would recommend 2.6.20. Plus, there's no user space support in 2.6.18. 2.6.20 is the first time that you'll have user space support. So I'm going to walk through a little bit of the dock station code. I'm not going to go through all of it, but I'll show you, like, the interesting stuff, I guess. It's actually not a very interesting driver. I tried really hard when I wrote this driver to leave the brains in the other drivers and to do as little as possible, because makes it less work for me in the long term if I don't have to do anything. So this is the initialization for this dock driver, and here's the call where I mentioned where we're going to walk through the DSDT table looking for dock stations. So this is an ACPI API that they give us. And basically what it's telling us is that we want to scan, starting from the root of your table, every single object. And every time you scan this table and find an object, I want you to call this function right here. And this is an argument that I can pass in that it doesn't know about. But I use that to tell me whether or not it's actually found something. Okay, so how do I determine if something's a duck? So it's actually really easy. All I do is call this function and say, I want to look for this method, the DCK method. As I mentioned, that's a requirement for dock station. So every time that find dock is called, I call is dock, and if it's true, then I found one. Okay, this is the dock notify routine. This is what I tell ACPI, this is a routine that I've told ACPI to call when it gets some kind of event on the device that I was interested in. So I told ACPI, I'm interested in the dock station device. If you see something, call this routine. And these are all of the events that I understand. There's bus check, which, as I said, should cause the bus to be re-enumerated. So basically, it's not a very complicated routine. If we're not already in the middle of docking, then set some flag, do the dock, and if we have a dock, then we succeeded. If we didn't, then we didn't succeed. And then I have a notifier list. Basically, other devices need to probably be informed when we dock so that they can go off and do something. I don't really care what they're doing, but I provide them a method in order to do something if they choose. And it's sort of like my way of, as I said, keeping the dock driver simple and stupid. We also have device check and eject, which are the same. And all we do is handle this eject request in a different function, which is essentially the opposite of the dock. So as I mentioned, re-scanning the bus is generally accomplished by other device drivers. For example, let's say you have a dock station that has a PCI to PCI bridge on it, and so that means you may have a PCI bus on your dock station. If you have some kind of expansion slot on your dock station, then you probably do. So I don't want to have to rewrite the code to scan PCI. There's already the PCI hot plug driver that knows how to do that. So all I have to do is tell the PCI hot plug driver that I've docked and maybe you should go out and do something, and it will do it. So, and that's the same case with other buses. So all we really do is execute the dock method on docking and undocking and call EJ0. Everything else is done by somebody else. So here's an example of me executing the eject method. I set up a list of arguments. Basically, eject has to be told. Actually, I wonder why it has an argument. I don't know. Silly. Eject is eject, but at any rate, it does have an argument. And then you just do it, and it fails with the things. Okay, so that was a dock station driver. After I did the dock station driver, a lot of people seem to think that removable drive bays were the same thing as docking stations. Even though they're not, they are actually handled very similarly. So I went ahead and implemented a really stupid removable drive bay driver just to make a little bit of functionality available. And this drive bay will be available probably into 6.21. It's in the MM tree right now if you want to play it out, play with it. So what's a removable drive bay? It depends on your laptop manufacturer, what they call it. You may hear it called Ultra Bay if you have an IBM. You may hear it called Module Bay if you have a Dell. But it's basically the little CD-ROM tray that you have that you can pull out and replace with a hard drive or something. It has usually some button on it that you press before you're allowed to eject it. And then you pull it out and you can swap it out. So what's the big deal with it is that if you don't physically call the eject method, then you're probably not safely removing the device. And B, we have file systems and things that are mounted that may get confused if you just yank something out from under it. So it's actually not a very satisfactory solution to the problem, but what we have in this bay driver gets us a little bit better. There has been bay driver support in the ACPI platform-specific drivers before, but there's never been a generic solution. So you were lucky if you had the IBM laptop because IBM ACPI implemented something that was broken, but at least it worked. When I say it was broken, I mean only that it only worked if you had a device plugged in already at boot time. Otherwise, it wasn't capable of, it didn't go out and scan for not present devices. So, at any rate, I'm going to talk about how we find the bay driver. It's a little bit more complicated than finding the dock, unfortunately. And then I'm going to talk about how we insert and remove, which is a little bit, I don't know, PATA makes things difficult because they don't natively support hot plug like SATA does. So here's an example of a bay driver defined in the DSDT. There's certain methods that are specific to ATA devices that you can search for. So here you can see defined up here GTM and STM. Those are specific to ATA devices, but it's slightly more complicated because you have usually a controller in as well as a device. So like the GTM and the STM will be assigned to the controller, but the actual eject method is assigned to the device. So I can't just search for the device. I have to look for the device's parent and then check for underneath the parent for the actual device. And this is what I actually want events on, not that. So this is another notification routine. It's exactly like the bay driver, I mean the dock driver. I tell it after I find the actual device I'm interested in, I tell it to call its routine, and we look for bus check, device check, eject request. And if you're asking yourself what exactly does this do, it looks like it does nothing. That is true. It does nothing. All it does is send it an event that says something changed, and it expects user space to handle it. Because as I mentioned, it's a little bit complicated with the PATA stuff, and right now we don't have a clean way of automatically cleaning up file systems and removing things, and so we just let user space handle it for now. So that brings me to user space notifications. This was implemented after 2.6.18. I didn't do it at first because nobody seemed to care about it very much, but as soon as it was present, they said, hey, we need to do something. So I did this. The both the dock and the bay are actually considered what they call platform devices, and that means that when you're searching for these devices in SysFS, you'll find them in this device's platform. It's basically a holding ground for devices that don't seem to fit under any kind of special bus. So right now we create some files in your platform devices directory. You will have an eject file for both the bay and the dock station that you can write one to if you want to cause it to eject from software. You don't have to do this if you want to eject the dock driver. You can actually use the button on your system. But if for some reason you want to have a software-controlled eject, you can actually use SysFS to do it. We'll also have a status file related to both of these devices. This is for scripts. Because I only send a change event out to user space, you're going to have to check for yourself what happened. So that means that it's up to you to know whether or not we've just been inserted or removed. You can check if the device is present or not present, but if you want to, sometimes the problem with working with actual physical devices is that sometimes things aren't nice and clean. Like maybe you didn't shove your dock in your laptop into the dock station nicely, and you get sort of jiggliness, and that causes all kinds of random events to just show up, and it says present, not present, present, not present. So, oh well, that's life in the real world. So the bay driver, unlike the dock driver, is not going to eject unless we have software help. And the reason why is because initially I wrote it so that it would just eject. When you press the eject button here, it would just do it. But that's not usually a good idea because there may be something else that needs to happen before we just yank the disk out of the device. So I guess user space is just going to have to figure out how to do it. But the good news is that you can write little UDev rules to handle with these pretty easily and do it once and then it's gone. And hopefully once these start getting integrated into actual operating systems like Fedora or whatever, then they'll just come with UDev rules already written for you. But for now, since no one knows this exists, you have to write your own. Oh, more puppies. I'm not a cat person. All right, well, gosh, I really flew through that talk. I'm not done. So what are we going to do in the future? So we need to have some nicer way to have this removable drive stuff interact with the actual SATA subsystem. It would be nice if we didn't have to have some kind of separate driver for the removing of the bay. Instead, it would just be part of your normal SATA driver. And actually, with SATA devices, they don't really require this eject method to be used, and so they don't need ACPI at all for their hot plug activities. But unfortunately, most laptops will still, even brand new ones, are still shipping with PATA behind SATA for the CD-ROM ATAPI device. So unfortunately, at least for the near future, we're going to have to accept the fact that we need ACPI for certain things, And that will add some uncleanliness, but it just has to be done if you want it to work. I would like to see in the future that these be integrated more tightly. The DOTS driver is pretty much done unless people start using it and I suddenly find that there's something that I didn't think about. Unfortunately, right now it's not getting a lot of use, so that means probably there's lots of broken things or whatever that need to be fixed. But as far as I'm concerned right now, it's feature complete. We might want to spiff up the user interface and do stuff sometime when we dock or undock, but for now I'm going to call it done. And that is the end of the presentation. So if you have any questions about ACPI or Hot Plug or Dock or Bay, now is the time.
So I'm using your stuff and it works. Thank you very much. Unfortunately, something doesn't work. I can hot dock and undock, and that's great. I can also use software suspend and software resume, and that's great. But if I change the dock state across the suspend, all hell breaks loose when you power back up.
I kind of thought that would be broken. Yeah, that's a test case that I haven't given any attention to, and that's something I'm going to work on. Sorry.
Sorry, just to clarify that, buying software suspend, you mean suspend to disk?
Yes.
Right, so the issue there is to some extent the fact that when you do suspend to disk by default, none of the ACPI methods are called. It just shuts the machine down hard using the standard legacy mechanisms for doing so. If you use platform mode, so the machine goes into S4 state rather than S5 power off state, then on resume, there should be a bunch of ACPI methods called that should send a dock change notification, which should then mean that it all works magically already. But you just need to set a sys power disk to platform rather than shutdown. It might work. I'm not entirely sure.
That's why I've been avoiding working on suspend.
You made the drivers do all the intelligent work rather than your docking station driver. Did you have to modify the drivers much to get them to?
I did, not a lot. They have to be modified to register a notification routine with the dock station. I need to know what function that they want me to call whenever I dock. And also, I found in practice that sometimes the ACPI dock method really screws things up, and so you might need to have some sort of, I want to call them quirks. They're like, I actually used to call them dock quirks. It turns out that, especially on older laptops, vendors can put anything in DCK, and sometimes they put really stupid things in there that really break us because they don't in general test ACPI with Linux. What I wanted to plug the firmware kit. But let me finish my thought first. So they don't generally test with Linux, and sometimes they'll have really, really specific things to work around some Windows bug, and it completely screws things up. For example, I think it's the IBM, one of the older IBM T20 or T30 or something. You plug it in, and it decides, it's got a PCI to PCI bridge on it. It will automatically assign the bus number to the bus behind the PCI to PCI bridge when you do the dock, which kind of sucks for Linux because we sometimes have a different idea about what the bridge number should be, so then you wind up with a bridge number that's the same as some bridge that already exists on the system, or it doesn't leave enough space for, like the IBM dock station has several PC and CIA cards on it, and so you need to have lots of subordinate buses too underneath that. So at any rate, that really screwed up. And then the worst offender was, I think it was the T30, you plugged it in and it set the parent bridge number to 0, regardless of whether it was on bus 0 or not, which means that any time you go to scan the bus, you find nothing. And so it was completely broken. At any rate, I found this need to add some kind of special little fix-up. So I have two two things that drivers need to do to use the dock station. If they find that there's special little fix-ups that they need to do before we actually call them to scan the bus, such as fix broken bus numbering under PCI, then they can register a routine that I call first. And then I'll go through and tell them, then I will execute the dock method, which turns on, you know, that messes with the connector, so now they can actually find things on the dock station. And then I will call their, I just docked, you should go do something routine. Other than that, you don't have to make too many changes. The PCI hot plug driver was a little bit more complicated because right now the way the code was written in the PCI hot plug driver was that it would check for hot pluggable devices by looking for EJ0, and then it would try to get notifications on those devices. But since the dock also has EJ0, it would find that and it would think that it was a hot pluggable slot, and it would ask for notifications on that device, and ACPI would not allow you to have two people trying to get notifications on that device. So I had to basically put a little bit of code in the PCI driver that said, okay, it's ejectable, but if it's a dock station, I don't care. So that's about it. Other than that, I can't imagine too many more changes. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. So I wanted to take a minute to plug the linuxfirmwarekit.org website. As I mentioned to you, a lot of vendors don't actually test their ACPI methods on Linux. And so one of my coworkers wrote a kit that you can download and run it on your system, and it will run a set of tests looking for not only standard ACPI problems, but also things like misconfigured PCI and stuff like that. And we have a lot of hardware vendors who are starting to use it now to give to their BIOS development teams. And actually, the BIOS teams are usually pretty grateful because they don't know anything about Linux. This kit is just an ISO image that you can download and burn to a CD. You stick it in your device. It goes through a set of tests without any user interface usually, and it will detect common problems. And that makes them happy because they basically don't have to do anything. And if you as users decide to use it, you can actually point it out to them that they're failing this test, and then it'll get more visibility. Because I really think that if more vendors use this test, we'd have a lot less problems with laptops and servers and things, because they would start finding these things that come out and bite us all the time. So I wanted to encourage you all to check out linuxfirmwarekit.org, especially if you work for a hardware company, and start using it on your systems to find problems.
Thanks a bunch. We've got a small token of appreciation.
Only one glass. We got two yesterday.
Yeah? Okay. Well, the thing is, there are six here, and I think there are six talks in here.
It's okay.
So I haven't been told anything, so
I feel so unappreciated.
Another box?